you wearing a singlet?
Sunday night, and that means from high above beautiful Lake Osceola in downtown Jefferson Valley, New York, the John Mack Radio Show is on the air. Good evening. This is John McMullen, John Mack to some. Welcome you to the 215th episode of the weekly John Mack Radio Show. The recording for the previous 214 shows may be found at www.johnmack13.com under the radio show tab. And John Mack is J-O-H-N-M-A-C, so that's www.johnmack13.com. In addition to the previous radio show, you'll also find links to my online daily newspaper at my web home. The newspaper is a curation of news articles from around the country and the world, articles relating to politics, sports, books, the environment, arts and entertainment, opinion and technology, with a real focus on artificial intelligence, machine learning, big data, and what lies ahead. Try it and subscribe. Only one email per day, and it's free. Once again, www.johnmack13.com. I hope you'll join us every week at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Sunday evenings, either live or, as most do, listen to later. The recordings are archived at the website I mentioned. And notifications of the most recent shows, they're also sent out weekly by email and on Facebook. But I hope you'll join us next week when my guest is Tony Pena. Not the Tony Pena who was the first base coach of the New York Yankees, but the Tony Pena who is the poet laureate of Beacon, New York. And up to this show, the 215th in the series, as I mentioned, callers may call him at any time during this show by dialing 646-716-9756. I do hold the online participation of callers to near the end of my interview with my guests, or in this case, tonight's guests. My guests tonight are computer scientist Lorian Pratt and Josh Craig, offices of WinWorks, WINWORKS.AI. Josh is the chief executive officer, and Lorian is chief technology officer. Regular listeners to the show may remember that Lorian was my guest on my 103rd show in August 2015. This is Josh's first appearance. Good evening, Lori, and I'm Josh, and welcome to the show.
Hey, John, thank you so much for inviting us. Really great to be back.
Yeah, thank you for having us on here. Happy to talk with you and talk to some of your listeners.
So, Lori, when you were last here, we traced your background from childhood in Massachusetts, Georgia, Michigan, and Wisconsin to your undergraduate study, your career with IBM, your master's and PhD, your focus on what you termed decision engineering, right up to your co-founding of Quantelia, where you serve as chief scientist. Would you just run through that background rapidly for those who were not here with us back then?
Sure. I can either talk real fast or abbreviate, so I think I'll do a little bit of both. So I guess I'm kind of a nerd by training. I was coding in the 1970s as a 14-year-old. And to make a long story short, I ended up with three computer science degrees, a bachelor's at Dartmouth up in the East Coast where you are, John, and also a master's degree in computer science and AI, and a PhD in computer science and AI from Rutgers University in New Brunswick. I was also along the way, I was at IBM for a while. I was a technology analyst in telecommunications for Frost & Sullivan, and most recently I founded my own company, Quantelia, in 2010.
Josh, for a little more involved background, where'd you grow up and then go to early school?
I grew up in Simi Valley, California, which is just northwest of Los Angeles, so the greater Los Angeles area. Grew up in the sunshine and with beautiful weather. And I went to through high school here, and then I went to California Lutheran University in Thousand Oaks, California, doing majors in – oh, go ahead.
Do you remember what your earliest aspirations were?
Earliest aspirations, I do. I grew up with a dad who volunteered for our county search and rescue, and I remember both my parents explaining to me what he did, why he was leaving certain nights, why he would suddenly get a buzz on his pager and then go running out the front door, and it was explained to me that he was going out there to try to save people, to rescue people, so they could go back and have dinner and see their families on holidays and for meals. And so I grew up, and my earliest aspiration was, I want to do that. I want to make sure people can see their families too, because that was something that meant something to me. And the fact that my dad would sometimes leave those things kind of left an impact of like, okay, he's leaving for a good reason. He's leaving for a really good reason. And I think that always stuck with me.
You grew up in the early days of the World Wide Web. Were you into computer technology as a child?
I was definitely into computers in a certain sense. In early high school, I did a bit of programming and took courses in it. I certainly grew up in the early days of the web and spent a lot of time gaming and goofing around. And then I think I just suddenly, at some point in high school, realized that it wasn't going to be my career.
You were going to go into your majors before. Could you take us through the rest of your education and your employment history before this current endeavor?
Sure, no problem. So when I was in college, I got two degrees in political science and then one in economics. And you know, I spent time through college doing internships and being engaged on the local kind of statewide and national level of politics, kind of volunteering time. So I interned with one of the county supervisors of Los Angeles. I interned in DC in a few different offices. And then shortly after college, I interned at the White House. And while I was there, I kind of got the dream offer that I could come back as a staffer. And so from 2015 up until this January, I was working at the White House in the Office of Communications.
Terrific. Lorian, before moving on, I have two Quantelia-related questions. First,
sure.
We focus on the term decision engineering as a basis for the firm's business the last time that we spoke. Would you define the term again for our audience?
Sure. So decision engineering is kind of the future of machine learning and artificial intelligence. I kind of iconoclastically see the future of AI as very different. I don't think we're going to have the robot apocalypse. I think what's going to happen is, and I'm seeing this happen, is that computers are going to work more hand-in-hand with humans. So they're going to be automated assistants. It's almost like turning AI on its head and becoming IA, intelligent assistants. And decision engineering, which we're calling sometimes decision intelligence these days, is a methodology that allows people to link multiple machine learning systems together so that they're not just predicting new facts, but they're actually understanding how actions lead to outcomes. And so that has a direct impact on this current effort that we're doing with Josh, because there's a lot of actions that people might take as part of a political campaign, and certainly the outcome is that your candidate ultimately gets elected. And between those two things is a lot of complexity. You might sort of imagine a cloud of cause and effect, and decision engineering, decision intelligence helps you map that cloud and then help you understand how you can use big data, artificial intelligence, machine learning, to really understand in a way better than we've ever been able to do before, particular action leads to a particular outcome.
I agree with you in the at the highest level in them aiding what we do. What concerns me, and this is the tangent, I don't want to go too deeply into it, is all of the jobs that have been replaced by robots, by Amazon, by iPhone, iTunes, by the fact that we've been made part of the system. The consumers have been made part of the retail system. So, for instance, I pay my utility bill, my Con Ed bill, online, and that means that there's nothing going through the post office, that there's no one opening envelopes at Con Ed, that there's no one keying in that I paid, that there's no one collecting the checks and sending them off to the bank. And in most cases, these people that have these jobs are not in a position to upgrade their skills to move them to higher tech things. And then we see all the loan analysts and then all of the screening that's done initially by technology, by various algorithms on to whether we should pass along your loan application, we should do whatever. So I'm concerned at that level, and I think we have a whole other political problem that no one seems to be paying much attention to this. But that's my end of that.
Sure.
Coming back, and more germane to tonight's focus, when we last spoke, Quantelli was a standalone company providing rather unique services directly to organizations. But I understand that your focus has changed since then. How so?
Well, when we started out, we were offering this decision engineering platform to the world. And what we realized, and I think Silicon Valley knows this, is nobody wants to buy a platform. People want to buy solutions to hard problems. And so our solution to that was to layer different solutions on top of that platform and then to take an equity share in various companies who were our partners in that space. So, for instance, we have a company in education called AI Mosaic. We have a company in healthcare called eHealthAnalytics.net. And then we have this newest one, WinWorks.ai, as well as a couple of partner companies that like Versant Solution Groups and Visidata.com. So we have kind of this great ecosystem of relationships we've built up where we come in as kind of the nerdy technologists, right, building the solutions and building kind of the core platform, and then they can solve people's problems much more quickly. And, you know, if I could speak to your point about AI real quickly, because it also gets into what we're talking about with WinWorks. John, you're absolutely right. We're facing a disruptive period in history, but there are always disruptions when there's new technology. There's always like all the gee whiz stuff, and then we have a backlash. We realize there's unintended consequences of that technology. So we often see a second wave of new tech that solves those problems. And an important part of what we're doing is democratizing AI and machine learning so that it is accessible without having to have a PhD, and simplifying this tech, just like computers. You know, you could never imagine that you'd have a computer on your desk 30 years ago. Well, today it's hard to imagine that you'd be an AI data scientist, but I promise you this is such important technology, and it's becoming much more widely available to folks that aren't highly trained, and that's part of our core mission as a business.
Sure. All of the other great movements, though, the farm to factories or the industrial revolution, they always wound up creating many, well, not more jobs. Now we see there's a whole bunch of jobs that are replaced by, in many cases, higher priced jobs, but not as many of them. And that's my concern. What do we do short term? I know that you're actively involved technically with WinWorks AI. Do you have similar roles with the other firms, Lorian?
Yes, I do. Yep. Okay. Yep. Again, with their having the expertise in their particular domains and me coming in providing kind of state-of-the-art machine learning and decision intelligence technology.
Now, is Quantelli also a service bureau for each of these firms, or do some of them have their own equipment and their own processing?
It's a mixture. A lot of what we're doing lately is hosted on AWS, which we operate, hosted services. So, you know, the cost economies of hosting our own service just don't make sense anymore with Amazon and Azure out there. So some of us are hosted on Azure, some of our stuff is on AWS, and some companies like to have an on-premise solution. So we're kind of flexible. We do whatever our customers want.
Josh, I understand that a CEO, you can best frame the mission of the firm for us. Could you do that?
Sure. So one of the many things we're trying to do with WinWorks is basically restructure and reconnect the network that communities have towards each other with their candidates for office, the campaigns, and with each other. And how we're doing that is we're using machine learning and Quantilia services and Lorien's expertise to basically help campaigns match and calculate which of their volunteers can talk to who and how to get the best message across. So you're reaching out to people with their issues, with things they care about, and talking to them about their community rather than going in blind or knocking on doors or guessing, okay, so this precinct, like a lot of people here work in this industry, so we're going to guess that every door we knock on, we're just going to talk about this industry and we'll get what we get. And so how we restructure that is we individualize it, where we're helping figure out what each person, before you knock on that door, what that person is going to be interested in based on their geography, certain demographics, how often they vote, and basically help campaigns become highly efficient and highly structured in how they interact with each person, get rapid feedback, and continue to get better and better in how they're interacting with their own constituents or people who they want to vote for them and how they earn each citizen's vote.
There's been some major pushback against firms recently, like Axion, that's been gathering information from various sources, and they've been developing profiles that are then usable by clients. How do you get around this concern about people gathering information and then profiling individuals?
Sure.
I can jump
so
in on that
I,
one. Go ahead,
go
Josh.
Go for it, Lauren.
Sure. I mean, this is the pattern I mentioned before, John, where we have a new technology, it's incredibly powerful, and then we start to realize the unintended negative consequences. And so the good news I have for your listeners is that there's a lot of new technologies that help to solve these problems. And if I could leave you with one message on this, it has to do with transparency. So what's happened in the last year of elections is we've seen an awful lot of news that's been distributed without the knowledge that the news might be fake and without any sort of auditing or regulatory framework in place. And, of course, if you put ads like that on television, that certainly wouldn't be allowed. And so what we do in industry is we try to get ahead of the regulations and introduce transparency as best we possibly can. And so we allow people to view their information and audit their records, which is pretty much standard practice in many domains when you're trying to make sure that you're trying to engender honesty and truth. It's just having as much transparency as possible, and that's a core value that we have.
But you probably remember that last year the New York Times broke a story that this University of Pittsburgh's hospital group, they own 6 or 8 hospitals in the northern Pennsylvania area, and they have an insurance company that services it. And they had a questionnaire that talked about predictive analysis so we can structure our programs to what our clients need. And the questions in it, do you drink, do you smoke, do you do whatever? They didn't tell the people that they were buying the profiles on the individuals from Axion, and they were comparing them. So if you said you don't drink, but if they knew that you were spending $500 a month at the liquor store, whereas you might have been doing it for your alcoholic father-in-law or whatever, that they could have some negative things against you. Now, since then, they have in some places there's a way to opt out of Axion. But they haven't, but in many cases, the opt-out procedure is convoluted. Rather rather than having people have to opt in to places like that. And I think that's the reason for some of the negative publicity, that people don't know what's out there about them, you know. So.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. We haven't quite figured out how to solve this unintended consequence of social media, but we have to, right? And really, we're in a very new age. I like to think of it as democracy 3.0, where 1.0 was when a candidate could meet many of their constituents. 2.0 was when it was all about television and ad media buys. 3.0 is about social networks and distributed non-hierarchical contact. And we saw a lot of people exploit that in ways that maybe weren't as honest as they could be in the last election. And so we have to solve those problems. And you're absolutely right, John. It has to do with usability. It has to do with accessibility. It has to do with transparency. And this new wave of companies like WinWorks, like our company, has to kind of lead with honesty and integrity and transparency. Otherwise, you know, we're just going to be subject to the same problems that we've seen happen in the past.
If I can add one thing to that as well.
Go ahead, Josh. Sure.
Sure. So one of the additional good things about how WinWorks is doing it is there was a lot of, I think, deception in 2016 or misunderstanding, where a lot of that profiling was used to advertise to people and kind of use it to hit them with customized information. But you didn't know who was sending you that customized information. And that's been the subject of lots of articles, and I'm not going to dive into that. But one of the perks with WinWorks is that it's enabling face-to-face conversations and person-to-person conversations where you have an actual person in front of you talking to you, and that can eliminate a lot of that where if you've got that BS radar going on, you can kind of sense when somebody's kind of trying to deceive you and all that. And WinWorks encourages that and enables that, where you're talking to a real person rather than just seeing a billboard that's preaching something, but you don't know who's preaching it to you. This, you can identify who's talking to you, why they're talking to you, what their interests are, so you can have context when you're in a conversation to know where they're coming from.
They've got skin in the game. They're there in the room, right, as opposed to some bot or guy, you know, 10,000 miles away who doesn't have any skin in that game. Helps to even the playing field.
Lauren, in our last discussion, even though that you had done some work for ex-President Jimmy Carter Center, you generally maintained a rather nonpartisan demeanor. Yet in the firm vision statement, it refers to its founding after the 2012's unpleasant election results. Has the nonpartisanship, at least for this firm, gone by the wayside?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we absolutely have to solve the problems that we're seeing right now, and we have to bring the same kind of incredibly powerful technology that the right and commercial firms have been using for years. We have to bring it to the left, and that's absolutely the mission of this project.
Okay. Josh, in the same vision statement, it is written, our five-year plan includes opening a series of vertical and horizontal markets with solutions built on precision canvassing applications and extending into political action intelligence models. Would you flesh that out somewhat for us?
Absolutely, happy to. So the great thing behind machine learning and a lot of this is we can utilize it in multiple ways. And with this particular canvassing tool that we're using, it's possible to not just help campaigns and candidates reach people, but also nonprofits and charitable organizations who may have trouble fundraising or want to do fundraising better and to reach out to people who are interested in their subject, but they aren't necessarily able to always find them or find them in a timely manner. And so this can help do that as well, where if a charity is dealing with criminal justice in a certain region, they can utilize this to find people who are interested in the same subject they're trying to address and give them a call or meet up with them and talk to them about what they're doing in their own community, their own area, and if they might and try to talk to them about maybe volunteering some of their time or giving small donations or whatever else a charity may need. This tool can absolutely help with that. And we think it'd be a fantastic thing if you have charities everywhere that are a little bit stronger, have stronger donations, and can keep doing the great work they're doing, but with a little more support from the community and a little more public awareness.
It's all about bang for the buck, right? You know,
exactly.
When you've got limited resources, limited funds, being targeted and sending your volunteers out, you know, not to the folks who are already going to support you and not to the folks who definitely won't, but the folks in the middle who if you have a good, honest conversation with them about topics they're interested in, might be brought around to whatever you're trying to accomplish. And so that's the core to where we're going, is to use this incredibly powerful technology that powers things like, you know, Amazon and Netflix and Google, to facilitate great conversations for nonprofits and campaigns.
Let's stay with that for a moment, because, and I'm skipping ahead of where I was, but the way I understood the earlier comments from Josh, that if you were in a political campaign, you'd have people out there who are canvassing for some client, and they'd be engaging people in what they're interested in, what their particular things are, and that would be going up into a database that people would be using. Now, for the nonprofits, say for the charity, where would they get the information from so they know who to go to talk to? Would they have access? Are we talking about one large profile that would service both the political outfits and the not-for-profits, or are we talking about them each having their own database based on their questionnaires and their discussions with individuals? How will it work?
I think some
of
that
has to do
with
each.
Sure, I'll just say my quick bit of, I think part of that is going to depend on each client's needs and what we're trying to help them with. Some of them, additional information is going to be irrelevant, so we're going to try and target what can help them and what they can utilize. And I'll let Lorian take it on from here.
Sure. The one thing about databases is they quickly become obsolete. And I think if we look backwards at some recent campaigns, one of the issues is that the playing field is changing faster and faster. So even these pre-existing databases only go so far. What's really important about WinWorks is that we've got these canvassers, and they got their iPad or their iPhone or their Android, and they're walking up to the door. They not only, you know, have this more targeted conversation, but as soon as there's some new topic that somebody's passionate about, they put that into their iPad, that goes straight back to campaign headquarters, and then we can start to detect patterns. We can do sense making. We can detect changes, you know, immediately, like in 5 minutes, if 20 canvassers are all realizing their constituents are interested in, you know, gun control because something just happened, right? Then they can take that back to headquarters, and the candidate can then know that that's of interest to their constituents and can start to talk more clearly on that topic. So you know, I think you know, data is not static, and even you know, a campaign that starts with no data can use this kind of a tool to understand better what's going on within its district.
I get that. My follow-up, though, is then, okay, so they find out there's a whole bunch of people here that are interested in gun control, and it goes back to the candidate, so he's got it. Now, there's some charity, the charity that has nothing to do with the campaign. The charity is raising money to help victims of gun violence, or if the interest of the community was on cancer because of the pollution in the air. Now you have the American Cancer Society that's going to fundraise it in that area. Will they have access? Will they be able to buy into the political database and find out who the people are that are concerned about cancer and who the people want? How will they know who to canvass if they don't have access to this other data?
Go ahead, Josh, or I can answer it.
Go ahead.
Okay, sure. So we're pretty data agnostic. We're not buying databases for our campaigns or for volunteer organizations. Instead, we're providing a tool that allows them to gather further data. So,
okay.
You know, certainly you go through a neighborhood and just hit every house And there's the start of your database if you don't have one to start with. Or there's some national databases. I don't know what the rules are about non-political organizations buying political databases, though, so I can't speak to that.
Okay. The next sentence in this statement mentioned social media. Does this refer to what we normally think of social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, et cetera? And then if so, how will Belay fit into the mix?
Sorry, can you say that again?
In the vision statement, one of the sentences mentioned social media. Are we referring to what we normally think of social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram? And if so, how will those elements figure into the mix?
Sure. So right now, there's a limited social media aspect, but some of it has to do with how people are going to network, how people are going to share information, and how we can possibly connect that in with machine learning and your opinion basis and other such things. And then it's I think right now it's more of an expansion thing and taking into consideration how people use social media to continue to interact. And
I can see how that, for instance, if there's an issue in an area, there are hashtags anti-gun or pro-gun or pro-NRA. You'd be able to gather them from particular areas. I just didn't know if that was the your idea that you're going to be scrubbing Facebook or Twitter or other places. I guess that's not defined yet. Is that correct?
Yeah, and Lorian and I have talked about that a little bit, and I think right now we focused on canvassing itself. I definitely, myself at the White House, I was the media monitor, and so I was the White House's tool to do that scrubbing through Twitter and other social media tools to find out what the breaking events were nationally, internationally, and breaking news. And so we've discussed how we can do that in the future, but I think we've kind of zoned in exactly on canvassing and how we can start with that and then go forward with other projects related to scrubbing and finding breaking trends via social media.
It's interesting, though, about Twitter. You know, I was in a fire, actually, in Southern California earlier this year and couldn't get back to my house and was trying to figure out, you know, how I could find out information about what was going on. And Twitter sure was the most real-time, immediate source of kind of information about the community. And so certainly on our roadmap, it's possible to subscribe to Twitter data feeds so that you can see which topics are trending in a particular region. And that would be, you know, fantastic input to our campaign database. And there's a lot of machine learning on Twitter, right? So how can we predict based on, you know, what we know about a person, which topics they'd be interested in? Well, if people like that are always tweeting about gun control, then we can detect that pattern. And so that's a really important part of our roadmap down the road after we get away from just the basic canvassing that we're doing right now.
One basic concern relating to the current situation is the Alabama Senate election, with the current polls show the Democratic candidate to be well in the mix, but some wisdom indicates that there are some, if not many, voters who will not admit to supporting Roy Moore for fear of being thought of as just a bigot or an acceptor of pedophilia, but will vote for him. Do situations like this fall into what you hope to properly analyze in any canvassing situation?
Sure.
Absolutely.
Should I speak to that, Josh?
Sure.
Go ahead.
Go for it.
So sorry. You know, I think, you know, it's funny, again, these unintended consequences of new technology. Stuff just bounces around in the echo chamber, and people don't hear about differing opinions. And, you know, I think what we're doing with WinWorks is we're trying to rebuild that sense of a small community, you know, whether we're using a game-like app on your iPad to go from one house to the next and rewarding people for having these meaningful, substantive conversations, I think that'll start to cut into what we're seeing as very polarized politics right now. It's, you know, it's what humans were evolved for. We're supposed to be in neighborhoods. We're supposed to talk to the guy next door. We're supposed to form opinions, not just with some bots 10,000 miles away in Russia, conversations with them, but with the guys in our local neighborhood. And I think that's one of the great promises of AI, is to help to facilitate and reconnect those kinds of conversations when we combine it with social media and some gamification that motivates people to get out and have meaningful conversations.
Well, the idea of having the canvasser being engaged with the people and discussing things, perhaps the canvasser being trained to be non-judgmental or non-argumentative, to just listen, would be a big help to that. I've seen many people when I hang around at the local bookstore or in Barnes & Noble, where they do have discussions, but it's always the left versus the right, and it can, unless the people close friends, it can break down into fascists and communists and yelling. So, I think anything that can get people talking to each other in a reasonable way, in the listening as well as the talking thing, could work very well. But it would require some training of the canvases, obviously.
Yeah, it's funny. We tend today to use kind of superficial characteristics of people to know whether they're safe to talk to, right? Their skin color, their age, their gender. What's kind of neat about AI is it's able to discover new things. You know, it might turn out, based on an AI analysis, that the 42-year-old Hispanic woman down the street has more in common with the 19-year-old African-American in terms of their interests than they do with other people that might, you know, superficially seem to be in the same category. So that's another exciting thing about this technology, when it's used right, that it can help to break down those barriers.
Sure. You can even see that at the highest level, at the more affluent people, the difference between the approach of the Bill Gates and the Warren Buffett to the Koch's and how their money should be spent, you know, and I think that
mm-hmm.
that's a... they may be closer to the people who are working at the lower level for some charity outfit than they are to other people in their income or in their asset range. And if you say, it may be all the way down across income levels and color and ethnicity.
Absolutely.
The same statement in the vision statement says, the WinWorks AI products offer precision canvassing, political intelligence, and the process built to create relationships and trust. I think I understand the canvassing is differentiated from polling, but would either of you define for the audience political intelligence, which many of us have heard during the gathering about the Russian, as well as the process built to create relationships and trust?
Sure. So I think we can kind of give some examples with political intelligence of not just the canvassing, but taking all the information from that. So when a canvasser is finished with their task and speaking with a voter, they leave that household and then they continue using the application on their phone and they fill in basically the information of what they got out of that and what they were interacting with the voter, the potential voter on. So they fill in, were the predictors right of these certain interests? What was talked about? Was the voter engaged on this? Did they have additional interests? Were they exceptionally engaged? And so they're potentially a future volunteer, or were they interested in finding assistance on election day to get out to vote? And it's basically taking all those small interactions and putting that information all together, and then the machine learning can use that to get larger trends of what maybe neighborhood opinions are, picking up on things that you might not get from a poll polling an entire district or a sample size of this takes that these micro instances. and can help campaigns utilize them in a completely new fashion.
Okay. A process built to create relationships and trust, that sounds kind of amorphous to me. Is there, can you nail that down some way? What would this process be?
Sure. So the process is going to start with a knock on the door and a canvasser from a local campaign talking and engaging a voter on their interests and having a listening ear and engaging them on what's important to them and how the candidate for this campaign is trying to speak to those issues. And no matter the degree of success in that, when they leave, they get that additional information and they can come back and speak to voters again. They can follow up with questions that weren't able to be answered via mail or a phone call or next time they're in the neighborhood and address each voter's issues on things that you may not have a perfect answer for, but a canvasser can actually say, let me get back to you on that, or let me see what we can do about that. And through the process of the app, they can start to get back information where you're not just getting a quick 2-minute sales pitch and then you never see that person again or you never hear from the campaign. And you can start building a real relationship with all your constituents on what's important to them, how you interact with them, what's the likelihood of when this person wants to hear from you again, to start to build a following and start to build a better community relationship.
Now, it would sound as though the individual people using the service would need a good deal of training. Am I right about that, then?
I think it's all relative, and I think the good aspect of this is because it's on their iPhone. We can do continuous training with individuals as they're in the field. We can do it as they're logging in to the app. And before they've started, we go in with the campaign, talk about how to utilize the tool, how it works, how we can work with all these people. So I think in the long run, all these processes, they can seem really big at the beginning if you were to sit down and do a whole bunch of training. But the fact that it's a continuous process and that you get feedback and you can continue to advise these people, even if you've got somebody who's having a really rough time and not doing a great job, you can get them to continue to do better. And I'd say the other positive benefit of this is WinWorks is also using machine learning to pair good canvassers with good voters where they have similar topics. You're not just sending somebody, go talk to all these people about the environment, if this canvasser doesn't know anything about the environment, that you're pairing people together for the best possible success. So if you've got a volunteer who's an educator in their community, they're going to be matched up with people who have their kids are students in the local community and who have issues where they're interested in what the education policy is and how it affects their kids. So we kind of attack this on multiple levels of we're creating the best recipe for success for each campaign, for each canvasser, and so that the voter gets the best possible person talking to them and vice versa.
Lauren, do you want to add anything there or no?
No, I think Josh really got it.
Okay. Would one of you tell us as much as you're comfortable going in to your current products as well as those envisioned?
Sure. So right now our product is an application that can be on an iPhone, an Android, or an iPad. And basically we team up with a campaign and we go in with them. We do a quick analysis. So the senior people in a campaign, the candidate, can interact with an admin interface where they can see a lot of the bigger picture. And then if necessary, they can jump into a smaller instance. And then from the canvasser aspect, they'll basically, if they're a volunteer or a regular staffer or a paid staffer, they're basically going in and they're going to download an app on their phone. And it's going to start going through a training process with them and going over what their credentials are, what their background is, in related fashion of what their skill set is, what their politics are, and what they're good at speaking about, and then utilizing that and putting that information in. So when they go out, the database of the campaign, some of our information, and the voter, when they go out, they'll go into a neighborhood, they'll open up the app on their phone, they'll have a kind of a progression of the path they're going to take, the doors they're going to knock, and as before they get to each door, it'll pop up showing these are the like three most likely topics that this person could be interested in, and then you can click on that in the application, and you can actually find out if you're unsure or if you want to double check, you can't quite remember if your candidate has talked about the issue before or what they said, or if you're not sure if you're thinking, if you perfectly align with exactly what they said, you can go in there, click on that topic, and you can read about what your candidate has said about each topic, get a refresher between houses on each topic. And so when you're going to that door, you've been given the best assets you can of knowing what the candidate's message is, in addition to that, there will also be breaking, if there's any breaking news on that or any national trends, you'll also know what the latest trend is nationwide in the community and how that relates. And so when they go to the door, they can talk to that voter about that, they can engage on that. And then when they leave, they'll be looking at their phone again, enter in what they talked about, the interest level in that, any additional information, any language skills or any additional requirements that would be needed if you'd interact with this person. So if they're a Spanish speaker, you're going to want to make sure all your canvassers from now on are sure they can speak Spanish, they can go in there, and they can relate to people. And that information goes back, and you just start to get this feedback loop of each time you interact with a person, each time you have an instance in the community, you get better and better, and so that when each next time you check your phone, your information is even more accurate, you have a history of what interactions have happened with this person in particular, and you start to build a really great political machine where you can engage people in a timely, effective manner that engages them the way that keeps their interest.
I think if I was to bottom line this, in terms of our vision, is that we'll be Pokemon Go for democracy, right? So it's easy to use as Pokemon Go, right? So like at level one, it's super, super easy, and it's really motivating, and it's really cool, and you go around from one place to another, and instead of fighting your Pokemon, you're having like meaningful conversations with people. But by the time you're like level 9 or level 18 or whatever it is, you're like a super surrogate, right? So you really know your candidate's positions, and you can have these two-way conversations with voters that are like super powerful. And then the idea is that it's so motivating and it's so gamified that everybody kind of wants to level up all the time, and they're proud of their level that they're at, and that it's fun and it's interesting. And so, you know, really trying to bring that kind of addictive gaming mobile thing to democracy. I mean, to me, this is the future of how we start to interact with each other, as we get out from behind our screens and we go out and we walk around.
And then the back-end program is going to analyze it. Are you doing that yourself?
Hey, John, you're breaking up a little. Could you say that again?
Yes, the program itself that's going to take all this information and put it together, are you developing this for each of the clients, or are they doing it themselves?
So we've got a platform that gets customized for each client.
Okay.
It's not a lot of work if you're using the basic functionality.
Okay. We've done a whole bunch tonight. Is what else would you like the audience to know about either the firm and are you personally? DeLorean.
So I guess I'd like to you know, leave everybody with, you know, really the vision of AI, right? Artificial intelligence, it's not the robot apocalypse. It's not going to eat you for lunch. It's one of the most powerful technologies. And if we look at data as the seventh sense of humanity, right? It's how we get information from outer space. It's how we learn about massive trends in a complex world. AI is what sort of ingests all that data and makes it usable. So why aren't we using this for the really important problems like saving capitalism and saving democracy in very complex times? And so I'm really honored to be part of this team and to have been invited by Josh and everybody else to be able to take this technology and bring it into a human dimension, to not have it always kind of out there exploiting the information that you share, but instead really turning that around and helping to facilitate again this third wave of democracy, where we're about to, back to a social network and a distributed community and candidates who can feel that they have that two-way interaction with their constituents, not just when they're being elected, but after they're elected. In order to effectively represent folks, you really need powerful super surrogates who are able to volunteer and help to communicate on your behalf. And so I think AI, decision intelligence, which links the AIs together, is a really exciting technology, and this is a great way to use it.
That's a terrific vision. I sincerely hope that you're correct. Josh,
thank you.
Do you have anything to add?
Sure, and I think I would definitely try to tap into a lot of what Lorian said. I think there are no easy solutions, otherwise it would have been done. But what I think this can start to do is when you start engaging people and you get them interested, that enthusiasm carries through. And I think when you're starting to do that, where you're reaching the easy people first and you're starting to get them engaged in politics again, you're getting them interested, you're informing them on what the issues are, what's important, what people in the community are talking about, I think that really starts to build momentum where you can start pulling in apathetic voters. In the U.S., we have a huge problem of people not voting and not interested in voting. And I think when you're able to tap into what their issues are and tap into what concerns them on a daily basis and engage them on why voting matters and why engaging with the candidate. And if you think the candidate is wrong about something or a campaign should have a better policy, engaging with them on that can make a huge difference. That sitting around never solved anything. But if you can engage people, if you can interact, and I think this whole process is going to start a big trend of machine learning, of using tools like this to not just, so you're not just working hard, but you're working hard to work smart. That I think a lot of our issues in society can be solved, and we can find those great solutions to our tough problems. And I think engaged citizens who are passionate is what has solved every issue humanity has ever faced, is a few people who want to make a difference.
It's funny, you just reminded me, Josh, you know, the way I think of social media is it's sort of inundating us with ideas, right, with facts and articles and links and stuff. The next generation is exactly what you just said. It's reinstilling a sense of agency. I mean, I think everybody's overwhelmed. And so we're just sitting around and reading things, right? But there's a hunger. The next generation of social media will be about taking ideas on an app, right, and turning them into actions in the world, and will be to reengage that sense that your actions make a difference, that you can see how that chain of events where you're going out and volunteering and participating can really have an impact on the world. So I really think this is the future of democracy, the future of social media, to move from ideas to actions. It's a really exciting place to be.
I hope you can get this in place on a wide scale, if not for 2018, but definitely by 2020 to have some impact on the election, so you don't have to have the same reaction after that you did after last year's election. So I will be gathering links for the audience, and I will be sending an article out that will be posted on my daily newspaper and other places, and I'm sure that Lauren and Josh will also be sending that to a bunch of people. Thank you, Josh and Lauren. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you for having
thank
us.
Thank you so much, John.
It was great talking to you.
Send
thank you for your listeners for taking the time.
One hopes there's a lot of them out there who will form opinions on it. Send any comments, speaking of the listeners, or questions to me at johnmack13@gmail.com. And in the words, the Mets radio announcer, Howie Rose, if the Mets would put it in a book, go to my website, www.johnmack13.com, for the URLs, the previous shows, and the schedule of upcoming shows. Tune in next week for my discussion with Tony Pena. And until then, as they used to say in the old neighborhood, see ya. Whoa, Silva, steady. And we're not getting the Lone Ranger theme, so I'm just going to say good night, everyone, and thank Lauren and Josh again, and we'll see you next week.